Bonsoir. Alors nous accueillons ce soir Dan Graham à l'invitation de l'EBAPS, c'est comme ça qu'on dit, l'école d'enseignement supérieur d'art de Bordeaux. Et je remercie Guadalupe et Echevarria d'avoir choisi d'organiser ici, avec Arc en Rêve, ce rendez-vous. Un rendez-vous exceptionnel avec un artiste d'exception. Merci à Dan Graham d'être là, de nous offrir cette rencontre avec une œuvre, son œuvre, qui réfléchit inlassablement l'art, une réflexion critique sur la place et le rôle de l'art dans nos sociétés, une œuvre qui met en jeu l'architecture, le dedans, le dehors, et qui nous instruit sur les modes de production et de représentation de l'environnement urbain et plus largement de l'environnement sociétal, une œuvre qui met en question les perceptions que chacun, chacune a avec l'art, qui interroge le rapport que les uns et les autres cultivent avec l'art dans sa relation avec les territoires de la création, en prise directe avec les questions politiques, au sens de la cité, qui travaillent nos sociétés humaines. Donc merci Guada, merci Dan Graham, merci à vous d'être là. Et Guada va faire une présentation et une introduction de cette...
Très courte.
Dan Graham, c'est un ami. Je crois que ça, c'est important que je le dise. Il est très important pour moi. En tout cas, il a été quelqu'un de très important dans ma vie. C'est un ami de l'École des Beaux-Arts. C'est la troisième fois qu'il vient à Bordeaux, à l'École des Beaux-Arts, pour parler aux étudiants, leur montrer son travail. Ce même après-midi, il l'a montré encore une fois, ici, Arc en Rêve, pour les étudiants de l'école, Rock My Religion. Ils ont parlé un petit peu après la projection. Voilà, c'est aussi c'est normal qu'il vienne en centre d'architecture parce que c'est une passion de Dan, l'architecture, comme il est la musique. C'est pour ça qu'on a été reçu par une des dernières travaux qu'il a fait qui s'appelle The Greatest Hits of Dan Graham, 4 volumes. Voilà. Donc, Dan Graham est né en 1942 à Urbana, dans l'Illinois. Et c'est un artiste américain, bien sûr, qui travaille à New York. Il est extrêmement influent dans l'art contemporain, à la fois comme artiste conceptuel de la première heure, comme critique d'art, d'architecture, de rock, et aussi comme théoricien. Il n'a pas été dans aucune école d'art, ni il voulait non plus être artiste au départ, mais il a commencé en fait comme galériste et critique pour d'autres artistes de sa génération. En fait, il s'est installé sur une zone dont il est encore très difficile de reconnaître la singularité, puisqu'elle disqualifie les polarités traditionnelles, auteur, spectateur, artiste, critique, et suppose une pensée de la médiation autrement complexe que celle qui constitue l'ordinaire des discours sur l'art, celui de la sociologie, et aussi, je dirais, l'anthropologie que Dan aime beaucoup. Plutôt qu'établir, comme d'autres le font, l'œuvre de Dan Graham et la diviser en deux périodes distinctes, c'est ce que tout le monde fait, une première période, les 10 premières années, de 1965 à 1976, qui est très conceptuel, d'œuvres textuelles, des films, d'essais, des performances, d'installations vidéo et d'espaces miroirs, et une deuxième partie, orientée vers des modèles architecturaux, qu'on va voir beaucoup aujourd'hui, et des pavillons hybrides, comme ils les appellent, art-architecture, exception faite, bien sûr, de Rock My Religion, qui est une œuvre extrêmement singulière, autour d'une histoire très personnelle qu'il a composée sur le rock and roll. On va suivre, comme il nous invite à le faire d'ailleurs, l'enchaînement de certains principes qui lui sont chers, par exemple l'hybridation et les combinatoires, les passages du temps et ses intertextualités, puisque son œuvre présente cette caractéristique d'un être arrêté, ici ou là. C'est une œuvre qui recrute, qui implique, qui connecte, qui mobilise et qui construit les réseaux de ses traductions. Elle n'existe qu'au prix de cette mobilisation. Son œuvre, très marquée par les principes de l'art conceptuel, c'est normal, il est un des créateurs, un des fondateurs, art qui a repensé radicalement l'adresse de l'œuvre. On pourra par exemple reconnaître dans l'expérimentation de son travail une attention extrême à ce que les théoriciens de la littérature des humanités nommeront les matérialités de la communication. L'appareil de l'écriture, les technologies de la consignation, du stockage et de la mise en réserve, de l'enregistrement et de la transmission. C'est là les matériaux d'Anne Graham. Les spectateurs sont convoqués de différentes manières dans cette œuvre. D'une part, il agit dans l'espace et dans le temps, il est présent. Et d'autre part, il interroge la singularité de l'art. Ce qui les qualifie, c'est moins d'avoir assuré la promotion de l'idée, qui est une revendication récurrente des artistes depuis au moins la Renaissance, que d'avoir porté la délégation au cœur de l'œuvre elle-même et repensé radicalement la destination ou l'adresse de l'œuvre d'art. Voilà ce que je voulais vous dire ou lire. Maintenant, on va passer à cette conférence projection qui va être pour beaucoup autour de cette période ou de cette phase des pavillons et des œuvres des modèles architecturaux.
Vous avez des micros, des casques dans les sièges et sur le canal 2, vous avez la traduction en français.
My work is often for public space situations, and I'm basically a Jacques Lang, a Mitterrand European socialist, and some of the best works I've done were during done during the 80s in regional frocks, and I always do hybrid work, I've had a problem with Daniel Buren. He believes the museum is fixed. Whereas I think the museum in the 80s in France was basically these gardens, which became regional art centers. And I'll show you some of that work. I have to say my medium is two-way mirror glass. And I'll just show you some examples. I'm also an architecture tourist. I just love architecture. We're going to put the first work I'm going to put on. It was one of my earliest pieces realized. It was realized for Document in 81. It's called Two Adjacent Pavilions, and we're going to screen it. It uses the material is two-way mirror glass. We can screen it, and I'll speak about it as it's screened. It's now in the Rijksakademie. It's now in the garden, in the Corallium Mueller Museum.
The suburbs, and even the cemetery, relative to the beginning
Each pavilion has two-way mirror glass. That means it's transparent and reflective. That's a material that's normally used in the new office
park
buildings.
The park, in a way, was a utopian preserve.
It's 2.4 meters on all sides and in the height.
Have the idea of going back
you
to
can enter into these into these pavilions. There's room for four people standing up and two people lying down, which happened actually in Documenta.
The park and
the roof of one of the pavilions is transparent, and the roof of the other one is opaque.
Utopian idea with it. In fact, all of architecture took on that same utopian idea where each building became a blueprint for utopia.
The pavilion that has opaque roof is always dark inside, and you can see on the inside, you can see outside without being seen from people on the outside. On the outside, it's a reflection of yourself and the landscape. Whereas the other pavilion with the transparent roof, If the sun is out, it becomes very reflective inside as well as transparent. So people see each other reflected on each other in terms of intersubjectivity. One person can see each other seeing the other on both sides. There you can see the view from the outside. You can see me on inside one of the pavilions. We can turn the sound up now. Oh, it's up, I guess. Oh, yes. This has been relocated now in the sculpture garden at the Corley Mueller. You say the work is philosophical. When I was 14, I read a little bit of Being and Nothingness by Sartre. And Sartre talks about the child's ego being formed when they see somebody gazing at them as they gaze at the other person. So it's a little bit of a philosophical model, this piece.
You want the second
what,
one?
What? We'll show the next work. This is a piece I did for the booth of the Dia Foundation in New York. It's a rooftop pavilion. I used the roof, which had an old tool shed that became a coffee bar and a videotheque. And the forms on the roof, the forms of the roof are a cylinder, which is two-way mirror, surrounded by a cube with two-way mirror. The cylinder, as you'll see, echoes the water tower, so the work is very urbanistic. It's designed actually not only as a form, but also for performances. And you'll see in this video that was made for the catalog, that there's a rehearsal for a performance by a dancer. It's very urbanistic because all my work deals with the city plan. The water tower is a symbol of New York City, and I'm using for the floor boardwalk material like Coney Island, because I read Rem Koolhaas's Delirious New York, and I thought Battery Park City was coming up the Hudson and be like the Coney Island situation. There's a contrast between the two-year cylinder, which is Baroque, and you can see on the inside.
The exterior cube echoes the rectilinear grid of New York City. The cylindrical interior form echoes both the surrounding sky's horizon and the outer body of the spectator.
Outside, people see, particularly women, see themselves on the convex mirror as very thin. And there's a contrast with the cylinder, which is Baroque, the sky changes as people walk around, with a kind of Renaissance perspective of the cube, which also echoes some of the changes in that cylinder. This is another pavilion I did, the Heart Pavilion. It's based on an earlier pavilion I did for the lobby of the Carnegie International exhibition. The original pavilion was done because I think museums are very important, particularly the lobbies and museums are romantic pickup places. So in the lobby of this museum during this exhibition, I designed a Heart Pavilion as a romantic pickup situation. There was a collector who wanted the same piece. I said I'll do a variation. So I situated this in her garden. I situated this in her garden. She saw the piece at the Carnegie with her husband. He died, so I situated it so she could see it from her bedroom window as a symbol of their love. And one side is perforated metal. It's very psychedelic as well as landscape oriented. I'm sorry, the quality of this video is not that great anymore. And you'll see a lot of my work has a lot to do with landscape. It comes out of minimal art, but also out of the influence of Dan Flavin, whose work was very involved with Hudson River School luminous painters of the 19th century. I also used as a flooring slate because it's just outside near the barbecue pit and the swimming pool, so it's a kind of outdoor semi-suburban situation. The perforated metal makes for a kind of moiré pattern psychedelic experience. What's important in my work is the gaze of people inside and outside gazing at each other. In minimal art, everything is objective, but I was more interested in the situation for the spectator. The relation between subject and object in terms of being intersubjective.
You have to photograph yourself. That's what you don't want to do.
It's actually pretty psychedelic. Yes, I did use marijuana and some hashish. This is another very interesting piece. It's the Star of David Pavilion for a castle in Austria, which is used for art. I'm Jewish, and apparently in Austria, they're in denial that it was a fascist, that it had a fascist background. So in the moat area where there used to be water, I situated this water pavilion. It's a triangle which is water, and on top of it is a two-way triangle. And you can actually walk on top of the water on the water grid. I wanted to make sure this was accessible not only to the art public, but also to the local people. So those triangular basins outside, kids can wade inside if they have a picnic. Yes, it continues all the way.
Immer so ein Schritt auf die Seite, einfach so hin und her. Action.
You can see the piece from the bridge, the drawbridge. And then people could see it's actually a Jewish star. But the owner, who's an expert on Kiesler, the great architect, said it's a Masonic symbol. It has nothing to do with the Jewish Star of David. I think at this point in my career, I got very involved in the influence of Oldenburg. I wanted to do things that were symbolic. The heart is symbolic, kind of romantic, sentimental symbol, and the Star of David is symbolic. Also, with the grid, you can actually walk on the water. And I think Jesus Christ did that successfully in some of these Hollywood films, like the Ten Commandments. No, not the Ten Commandments. I can't remember which one. This is what it looks like in winter. This is a period in art. This was a period in art when a lot of art was situated actually in kind of castle situations. And this piece is actually done in the north of Norway. Norway supports art for local communities in the north and work for children. This was commissioned for a local community near a fjord in Norway. It's a very small pavilion, a triangle, one side curve. You can enter inside. I definitely have a roof because it rains a lot, and people in the neighborhood call it a shower stall. You can see my work is quite child-friendly, and here you can see girls seem to get it before boys. I've been doing more projects actually in Norway. Again, it's a kind of socialist government. that emphasizes work for children. This will be, we'll show this one also. This is a piece I did for a show in Munster called Sculpture. It's a parallelogram, one side curved, and the other side semi-open. The shape echoes the circular Roman plan of the city of Munster. The reason I was interested in pavilions is because I was interested in the Barcelona pavilion of Mies van der Rohe, but also pavilions are urbanistic phenomena. The bus shelter and the telephone booth are pavilions, and it's a kind of anonymous form that's both temperate, both art and architecture at the same time. And also, I think the surface of the modern city is very cinematic. So my work, originally I was doing work for video time delay that involved shopping arcades. So in a way, the material is like the kind of glass of show windows in the city, but it's also very involved with the change in light. And the first time I used two-way mirror glass is because in America, two-way mirror glass was used for big office buildings in the period of Jimmy Carter, because Jimmy Carter was involved in ecology, and he accused the corporations of ruining the environment. So what the corporations did is they used two-way mirror glass surfaces, which reflected the sun and cut down the air conditioning costs. But it was also the beginning of surveillance, because from the inside of these two-way mirror office buildings, you can see outside without being seen from the outside. But the outside surface reflects the sky. So it's like an alibi for the corporation, identifying itself with the sky. Now we'll put on another interesting piece. It's very architectural. It's from the next video. This is a piece I actually did in front of Giuseppe Torani's Casa Fascimo to celebrate the 100th birthday. It's in the city of Como in Italy. And you can see also how the city plan becomes very important in my work. This is a work. Casa de Fascio is a rectangle, and the public square on the other side is the curved Duomo church. So two sides are curved to echo the Duomo, and the other two sides are rectangles. This is a video that was made actually.
The old GDR area.
No, sorry.
The housing is upper middle class.
No, I think we made a mistake here. We have a video before this, actually, two-way hedge labyrinth.
Quite beautiful.
Can you go back to the beginning of this? There's one before this, the two-way way hedge labyrinth. It's on the same disc, but it's before that. I'm sorry, I forgot the order of this. Maybe you can just reinsert it and go back to the beginning.
I hope we have.
No, it's before that.
The neighborhood people, particularly the old folks, and passing teenagers.
Oh, there it is. Okay, this is a very interesting piece, also coming from a European situation. Originally, this piece was designed in 1989 for International Garden Year in Stuttgart.
It was part of an exhibition called International Garden Year. Every three years in Germany, a city is designing all the parks of the city and inside the parks, so it's about landscape architects.
And this particular every city has a garden festival where you can buy seeds, lawnmowers, and other things for the garden. And this was supposed to be a meeting place. It's a labyrinth designed of hedge, two-way mirror, and glass. It was turned down, but it was done for a collector in La Jolla. And all my work has a lot to do with the city, because I used the hedge because it defines not only the Baroque garden from the past, the labyrinth, but it also also defines the edge of the city, which is suburban, where every suburban house has a hedge defining inside and outside of the property. And the two-way mirror is actually emblematic of the center of the city. Now, this is in La Jolla near San Diego, and that's the Mexican gardener trying to start the power mower. I was also very involved in the idea of the city as a labyrinth, because I'd read many years ago a novel of the French novelist Michel Butor, where he describes being lost in a labyrinth in an industrial city northern England, and it's a kind of metaphor for orientation in the city. The thing about the hedge is it's both opaque from a distance and transparent as you become closer. And for this piece, I continue the edge of the property with the hedge. A lot of my work, this is just one example, in the 80s, was very much involved with kind of landscape and gardens. I kept the old tree and the swing. The swing was very important because this collector had a young child, and it was her swing. So it's from the point of view of that child. And this piece is actually constructed in Berlin near a power plant. The power plant was about to go nuclear, so they had artists do work, maybe as a kind of alibi. It's on the Spree River, and their new buildings, office buildings on the other side, which are elliptical. This was supposed to be situated actually on the edge of the river, but it didn't. They took that location away, and it has an artificial reflecting pond. When this is over, I'll put on the next one. Okay. This is a bit longish. It's an area of Berlin which was part of the GDR. Again, my work is kind of echoing off corporate office buildings. It's situated on a kind of artificial reflecting pond, a pool. Not my original design. I got very involved with the perforated metal because my favorite architect was great Japanese architect Shinohara, and his work influenced another favorite architect, Hasegawa, but now it's become a cliche. Jean Nouvel uses a lot. Every architect uses perforated metal. But I also like the use of Mori patterns to sort of. I think this video should have been edited. It's a little too long. But I think you'll like the ending of it.
You want to go
first? Oh, no, the ending is very good.
Okay.
The piece was near a power plant. In other words, an alibi, because it was converted to nuclear power. It's also the new center of Berlin, near the new Hauptbahnhof, the old DDR area of East Germany. The housing is upper middle class or lower middle class East German
from East
mass
Germany.
Housing. Not very attractive, but the area pretty soon will be quite chic, quite beautiful. I hope we have
East
a mix
Berlin.
Of the neighborhood people, particularly the old folks, and passing teenagers.
The bad news is they've taken away the water because apparently people have been urinating in a reflecting pond. And now we're going to go to the next fairly long video. It's the one that I introduced earlier. It's for the Casa Fascio in Como, Italy. And it's a fairly long video that was made for a publication about this piece and my other work. One of my girlfriends said the titles of my pieces were very boring, so I thought to call this Half Square, Half Crazy. It could be how I would describe myself as a troubled teenager.
My
my work often involves humorous parody. Here, the title could relate to myself when I started making art. Half square, half crazy. Or it could relate to the square, the piazza on which it sits, or to the cause itself, the two anamorphic sides, or to the crazy reflections. I started using the curve in my models in the mid-80s, and in full-scale architectural works like the two-way mirror cylinder inside cube for the Dia Foundation in 1990. I did want to break with the rectilinear forms of minimal art and the corporate office buildings of the 80s, which used neo-30s, neo-neoclassical forms. The Duomo and the Casa del Fascio are central monuments of Como. I wanted the two buildings to be optically superimposed. The curved sides echo the Duomo, while the two regular sides of the pavilion mirror the exterior of the casa. Children love it because it's like a hall of mirrors. They can see an enlarged reflection of themselves. Older women prefer the inside, which is convex.
No, the outside, that's a mistake. The little boy is like inside because you can be Superman. In case you don't know, Como is a good place for vacation. They used to say it was the sexiest man in the world. Loser. Also, Versace, the designer, who still lived there before he was sucked on the time of his death in Miami Beach. But this was actually done to celebrate the 100th birthday of the great architect Giuseppe Torani. The bad news was the piece was blown away by wind. It doesn't exist anymore. It's because it was a historical piazza, and they used marble, and they didn't want to anchor it. This is a view from above. The city didn't want to buy it anyway, so it may have been, would have had to be destroyed. It's a conservative city, but I guess you're used to that. Okay, we can take that off. And I have to say, there's one very good piece in a public space, not so far from here. It's in a big city called Paris. It's in Porte de Versailles, on the edge of the city. The socialist green mayor has constructed a tramway around the edge of the city, and every station stop in the tramway gets a work of art. So I have a piece in the Porte de Versailles. I didn't bring the video for that, but I think the work is quite successful in relating to the space. I think we can take this off, and now I just have a very short video of a piece I did. Actually, my work is supposedly anti-corporate, but this is a corporate piece. The city of Basel, there's a big drug company called Novartis in Basel, and they have a kind of a campus where people do research, and also they have school, a university there for pharmacy, there's a kind of garden area where people actually take their lunch, I was asked to do a piece. They also have commissioned works by all these great architects, like Macke, Frank Gehry, Sajima, whose work I don't like very much. So this piece, she's done a rectangle. So this piece, which we're going to put in very very quickly, is basically a way to kind of subvert her work. Maybe it's dirty. I just showed it, though, so it should be working. It's a very short video, so if it doesn't work, we'll just have to do without it. Yes, this often happens. People touch these things, including me, and if you clean them, they often work. So we're going to try cleaning it.
We put the other one because it doesn't work. Then I think it doesn't work.
Okay, it's not working at the moment. One piece I wanted to bring would be very interesting in terms of architecture. I had it with me, but it was mislabeled. I did a work which you can see at the Hayward Gallery called "Water the Sunset." The Hayward Gallery. I have to say, I think we forget about this one. I have to say, just like I think in the 80s. In France, gardens were the site of museums. And what's interesting about all the museums are situated in gardens in France is you're able to take the car with the kids, camp out Saturday, and then see work on Sunday. But in the 1990s, we had another situation. Almost all museums were very involved with the education program for children. Oh, there it is. We got it. Just a matter of patience. It's a very simple piece. So Jima's building is a rectangle. So one side is rectangle, the other side is curved to a mirror bisecting it. And it makes for a very complex situation, a little bit perverse. The curvature actually works with the landscape architect Gunter Voigt's design, and also with the sky and people's bodies. And then you can go in between the two elements in a kind of perverse space. interesting thing about my work is as you walk around it, as you can see, the work changes dramatically. It's really an experience in time and as you walk around it. Now it's stopped by itself. I guess the dirt is kicked in.
You want another time?
No. Before I play the next piece, I just want to say in the about the water of the sunset. In the 90s, almost all museums were involved with education program. I designed a girls' a children's daycare center, which was had computer terminal, a terminal for cartoons and a CD-ROM terminal. The piece actually is now in the Casa della Rivoli. And I also later designed a piece of the Water of the Sunset for the Hayward Gallery, which is an elliptical form that has perforated metal and has six screens. The screens show cartoons, which kids can see. It's free, and the cartoons are both classic cartoons, Mickey Mouse, or Crazy Cat, or are contemporary cartoons like Powerpuff Girls. And I've now designed, the piece is also used for education program. Whoever has a big show at the Hayward Gallery, like Wendy Warhol, it's designed to show their favorite film, Warhol's favorite films. I really think my work, one thing I have to mention about the work is one element of the work is it's quasi-functional, not just pavilions. I was deeply influenced by Russian constructivism, trying to situate work between art, design, and architecture. I know a lot of architects want to be artists. Unfortunate idea, and a lot of artists like Vito Conti say they're architects. My work is some kind of area in between. And now I'm going to show as entertainment a video I made pretty much for fun in the West Edmonton Shopping Mall in Canada. It's called Death by Chocolate. It's the biggest shopping mall in the world. If we can take questions if you want, but it should come on pretty soon.
On peut s'en profiter parce qu'on doit attendre que ça arrive. S'il y a des questions maintenant que vous souhaitez poser, il y a une question là-bas. Au fond.
In Berlin, did you make the wall because of the ancient wall?
Okay, wait. Can we go back to the beginning of this? Just go back.
Okay, thank you.
Want to answer to the question?
Let's see if it goes back and see what happens. Just go backwards. You can do it very fast. Okay, there we go. Okay, it's on. Death by Chocolate is in Canada, it's a place to buy desserts, mostly chocolate.
But it's a place that exists?
What?
It's a place that exists?
Oh, yes, it's a brand, it's a series of shops called Death by Chocolate. You can see a lot of my pavilions come out of looking at normal suburban and urban architecture. The interesting thing about a lot of shopping malls and corporate atriums is they're landscaped. There's a shop, Death by Chocolate. That's obviously Louis Couture's.
de écran là.
Edmonton is okay, so they have a temple water park. Enclosed inside a shopping mall. So you can experience California during the winter. But this is actually shot in the summer, and the elevator goes up to the roof. Typical pyramid on top of a building from this period, and this is AstroTurf. This is actually a regulation ice hockey rink. It's used actually for practice by the professional hockey team. And you can see Edmonton is very multicultural. That's the end. I think we should now have the lights on fully, and I'll answer some questions.
Je sais pas si il faudrait mettre la lumière.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Mm-hmm. Donc s'il y a des questions maintenant.
I think I cut a question off before. Do you want to go back to that?
Yeah. It was about the relation with the Berlin Peace and the Wall of Berlin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No relation.
There is any. Mm-hmm. Une ou deux questions. Mm-hmm. Oui, Dan l'a répondu. Mm-hmm. Il a dit qu'il n'y a aucune relation.
Well, it's a fairly full house.
Il y a des questions là-bas.
Okay.
Thanks. Hi, Dan, and thanks for the conference. Mm-hmm. I would like to ask you something about the relationship between the materials when you talked about this piece with the televisions playing cartoons for kids, mm-hmm. and you talked it was a word for an educational program, no?
Not really. It can be used for education program, but basically it's something that's open. It's a Haywood Gallery, and it's kind of open for people walking down the Thames to just use as a public space. But it could also be used by the museum for education program.
Okay. Well, anyway, the question is it related with this relation between the city and the media itself. If you manage to merge these kind of materials when you talk about glass, mm-hmm. and how the buildings are built with glass, mm-hmm. and the city itself is built with some kind of media materials as well, like publicity, mm-hmm. LED things and that kind of stuff. So if you merge this glass or these architectural materials from taken from the city, mm-hmm. and you use some television to add some kind of symbolism or of sense, I would like to know what do you think about this relationship between city and media, city and publicity.
Well, my favorite architect, Venturi, says the city is a series of billboards and neon signs. So that's very normal. But actually, I designed this more for museum functions, because the lobby or the waiting area of museums are social spaces, and this is basically an area where children and their grandparents can sit, enjoy themselves, and it could also has a multi-use. It could be used also for education program. Actually, there was a Liechtenstein show, and people used the space where the curator taught the children how to make Liechtenstein paintings. So it's a multi-use situation. But I also have to say, I don't try to critique the architecture of the city. My pavilions actually are more in a way I want to change the subject. My pavilions are more like Impressionism. They're places where you could lie down outside. Relax, and I see them to paraphrase to use the work of Foucault as kind of heterotopias, because the glass architecture of the city to a mirror glass is a little alienating. But my idea is to set up a situation which is a pleasure situation. So I'm really setting up a pleasure situation with these cartoons. Anything else?
As you have made a lot of video works, I was wondering if you're always filming yourself when you're showing the pavilions. You show films in conferences. Are you doing these films yourself? We can see you filming in the in.
Well, it beats diapositives. I invest a lot of money in making this because it's better for conferences, I think too much architecture and art is basically facades. Architects like in magazines like these facades, but I want to show the interior and also how people work functions in time, because people walk around and the daylight and the outdoor lighting situation changes.
But you made your films yourself?
Sometimes I do. Sometimes I find actually I'm a better director. I often I found very good students, particularly female students, are better at camera work. So I just become director, and sometimes I even pay for them to come to the location. It's a production I think is important. But actually the Como piece was done actually for a book. I had nothing to do with it. I was very lucky with that. But the Nevertus one, I did it myself, and it's too short.
Alors moi, j'aurais une question par rapport aux enfants et à la perception des enfants devant l'œuvre, car le fait que l'on utilise du verre, ça crée des silhouettes plutôt transparentes. Il n'y a pas eu des enfants qui ont justement eu peur ou dérogé assez violent par rapport à ces images qu'ils ne comprenaient pas forcément. Enfin, je ne sais pas comment la question... Enfin.
Every child is different. Generally, girls like the work, but of course, the old cliche is that girls are more narcissistic. But I also did a piece, by the way, I have to mention this, called "Girls' Makeup Room," which is a three-quarter two-way mirror glass cylinder, and the front where you can enter is sliding to perforated metal, I use it's for lobbies, and I use a small mirror that's a normal a flat mirror, and on top of that I have a kind of concave mirror ball, and you can hold it up and look at all the different possibilities of mirrors. It also has a magnet, so you could put it directly on the sliding doors. The sliding doors make for moire patterns. And also, there's lipstick on the desk, counter inside. And I found it, not only do boys, sometimes boys like it, but in museums, older women like it. Are people frightened of mirrors? Well, I guess I am at first, myself. I don't like to look at myself in the mirror in the morning. Again, I guess everybody has that problem. Okay, we're just going to take one more question. In terms of glass... Oh yes, we have a question here.
Yeah.
Par rapport au pavillon, vous, je sais pas si ça marche à peu près. Par rapport au pavillon, vous parlez beaucoup d'architecture. Est-ce qu'il y a aussi une approche sculpturale?
I don't know what sculpture is. All the work I've done, because my work begins in minimal art, is somewhere between sculpture, design, and architecture. And I began, I think constructivism was in that area. Maybe there's a traditional idea about sculpture, but I guess I like the idea of a hybrid. My work, I think, is both sculpture and pavilion as a kind of a funny hybrid. If there's a last one, you better do it now.
Is there any relation between Dean Martin and some of your works?
The what?
Dean Martin.
Dean Martin, you know, and some of your works.
I wrote an early article called... A relationship is at that point. I was interested in the idea of self-consciousness, and of course, in my work, I think in the beginning, there's a kind of idea of self-consciousness of yourself, and also, I think TV is always about self-consciousness and embarrassment, and it's true. In some of these pavilions, that they create a kind of awareness which is a little bit shocking. I'll also give you another reference. The Dean Martin in Dean Martin article, I talk a lot about Jean-Luc Godard, Contempt. But also, my favorite Godard film is One or Two Things I Know About Her, which is about high-rise apartment buildings on the suburban edge of the city. But of course, one relationship is I still try to integrate television into my work. In fact, there's an old book I published, which has been republished, called Video Television Architecture, because I think actually video is part of the architecture code. Video and TV and TV. Okay, thanks.